Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
This reading is adapted from Barbara Cooney's children's book, Miss Rumpius. The lupine lady lives in a small house overlooking the sea. In between the rocks around her house grow blue and purple and rose-colored flowers. The lupine lady is little and old, but she has not always been that way. I know. She is my great aunt, and she told me so. Once upon a time, she was a little girl named Alice who lived in a city by the sea. From the front stoop, she could see the wharves and the bristling mass of tall ships. Many years ago, her grandfather had come to America on a large ship. In the evening, Alice sat on her grandfather's knee and listened to his stories of faraway places. When he had finished, Alice would say, "When I grow up, I too will go to faraway places. And when I grow old, I too will live beside the sea." "That's all very well, little Alice," said her grandfather, "but there is a third thing you must do." "What is that?" asked Alice. "You must do something to make the world more beautiful." "All right," said Alice, but she did not know what that could be. In the meantime, Alice got up and washed her face and ate her breakfast. She went to school and came home and did her homework, and pretty soon she was grown up. Then my great aunt Alice set out to do the three things she had told her grandfather she was going to do. She left home and went to live in another city far from the sea. People call her Miss Rumpius now. My great aunt, Miss Alice Rumpius, climbed tall mountains where the snow never melted. She went through jungles and deserts, and everywhere she made friends she would never forget. Finally, she came to the land of the lotus eaters, and there, getting off a camel, she hurt her back. "Well, I have certainly seen faraway places. Maybe it is time to find my place by the sea." And she did. Miss Rumpius was almost perfectly happy. "But there is still one more thing I have to do," she said. "I have to do something to make the world more beautiful." "But what?" The next spring, Miss Rumpius was not very well. She had to stay in bed most of the time. The flowers she had planted the summer before had come up and bloomed in spite of the stony ground. She could see them from her bedroom window. "Lupines. I have always loved them best. I wish I could plant more seeds this summer," but she was not able to. After a hard winter, spring came. Miss Rumpius was feeling much better. Now she could take walks again. "I don't believe my eyes," she said when she got to the top of the hill. There was a large patch of lupines. "It was the wind." Then Miss Rumpius had a wonderful idea. She hurried home and got out her seed catalogs. All that summer, Miss Rumpius, her pockets full of seeds, wandered over fields and headlands sowing lupines. She scattered seeds along highways, down country lanes. She flung handfuls of them around the schoolhouse and the church, and next spring, they were everywhere. Fields and hillsides were covered with blue and purple and rose. Miss Rumpius had done the third most difficult thing of all. My great aunt Alice is now very old. Every year, there are more and more lupines, Now they call her the Lupine Lady. Often she tells us stories of far away places. When I grow up, I tell her, I too will go to faraway places and come home to live by the sea. That is all very well, little Alice, she says, but there is a third thing you must do. You must do something to make the world more beautiful. All right, I say, but I do not know yet what that can be. Well, it is December 29th. How are we doing? In a study about holiday stress and the brain, Harvard Medical School found that 62% of respondents described their stress level as very or somewhat elevated during the holidays. Only 10% reported no stress during this season. And it makes sense. Family dynamics can be painful. Finances can be stressful. There's a lot of pressure and not always a lot of support. The holidays, quite simply, can be hard. And then there's the recent election and the very near inauguration of a new administration. Many of us are overwhelmed or afraid. It can be a scary place out there. There are treasures in here, and in here. This is a time of year when our culture often pulls at us to assess what changes we can make in our lives. What habits do we want to stop? What goals do we want to set? How do we want our lives to be different? How do we want to be better? I don't know about you, but my post-holiday and post-election heart is tired. It has worked hard. How about yours? I hope for all of us a much gentler entrance into the new year. Rather than ask you about what you want to change about yourself, I'd like to invite you to take some stock of your treasures, to spend some time basking in your skills, values, characteristics, experiences, resources, and the regrets that you've learned from. These are incredible treasures. Most days, I'm a hospital chaplain, and when I talk about my work, I change identifying details to protect my patients and colleagues, but keep the essence of what happened. Hurting and tired bodies can still hold incredible treasures. I met a patient I'll call Josephine on the ICU, but before I met her, I heard all about her from her medical team. In rounds, it was hard to get to the medical piece because everyone from her techs to her nurses to her doctors gushed about how wonderful she was. I was excited to meet her, and when I did, I got it. Josephine was warm and kind and gentle. Her heart was failing, and she was too weak for surgery. She was stuck in the ICU for weeks, and as we got to know each other better, I let her know that she was already beloved on the unit. "I'm nothing special," Josephine said. "I don't have a lot to offer, but I have time and attention. And you all work so hard, and I love people. I just remember what people tell me, and I care what life is like for them. I think that comes across, and I think it means something." Oh, it did. Over the 2 months that she was hospitalized, her care team shared story after story about how much of an impact Josephine had made on them from her hospital bed. Josephine wasn't able to recover and passed away with a room full of family and a crowd of healthcare workers standing just outside her room. When she died, her family and her providers wept together, all full of sorrow. Josephine saw her treasures as having the resources of time and attention. I saw that Josephine also had treasures of compassion, patience, and thoughtfulness, which guided how she used that time and attention. On the same unit, a very elderly man that I'll call Ernie was rushed in with a team of very stressed doctors. I was paged. "Allie, can you help see if you can calm Ernie down? He's so anxious. His body is very frail, and we don't want to have to give him additional medication." Ernie was awake and a little confused. He reached for my hand, and I held his. I asked him what makes him happy. He told me church. Everyone in the room looked at me. "What do you like most about church?" I asked. Ernie said, "On eagle's wings." Many people looked confused, but I knew exactly what he was talking about, and I wonder if some of you might too. I tried to remember the words to this familiar hymn. "Me too, Ernie." This was Nancy's voice now. Nancy had been a nurse here for years. "Why don't we sing it together?" And with that, Nancy started to sing and stunned us all. She had an amazing voice. Ernie joined her. He had a really good voice too. And as they sang, Ernie's anxiety calmed. His vitals improved. Nancy's voice is a treasure. Nancy's willingness to share her voice, her concern for our patient, those are treasures too. I'd like to tell you about one more patient, but this time I'm gonna share his real name because his story has been published online. Pat suffered from heart failure and lived on an ICU for a year, waiting for a heart transplant, and learned firsthand just how much support someone needs to get through this long process. When Pat successfully made it through his procedure and started adapting to a new life, he vowed to help others going through the same thing. Along with another patient, Pat started the Heart Brothers to provide financial, educational, and emotional support systems needed by heart failure patients and their families. Their resources include places for patients and families to stay and scheduled visits where patients waiting in the hospital can have visits from patients who have had and recovered from heart transplant procedures, and their families can similarly get connected with each other. For 10 years, hundreds and hundreds of patients and loved ones have gotten help from Pat and his organization. Their impact is invaluable. Earlier this year, Pat returned to the ICU, his body sick beyond repair. Pat knew that he was dying. We asked Pat's permission to thank him, and Pat and his family agreed to a legacy walk. We invited Pat's care providers to meet in the hospital hallway to thank him for all that he had done. Hundreds of doctors, techs, nurses, social workers, therapists, chaplains, kitchen workers, and other patients gathered and lined the hallways holding up paper hearts. We clapped to thank Pat for all that he had given. Pat took his experience and saw unmet needs and created an organization to help. He used his business, fundraising, and people skills. He brought his compassion and dedication. His treasures were multiplied with each person that he had helped. Sometimes our treasures are not the qualities we have or even the resources we have, but they are the lessons that we learn. With her permission, I'd like to tell you about a lesson our Queen Cheryl learned, a lesson that has benefited all of us here. I recently thanked Queen Cheryl for all the work she does to welcome us at the front doors and inside this space. "Sweetie," she said with a burst of energy, "I know you've got to work on your sermon, but let me tell you the story of what got me to the door." Queen Cheryl moved to our suburbs from out of state and was longing for community. She tried a gay-friendly church, and even though it was very small and easy to pick out visitors, no one welcomed her. No one visited with her. She tried another church much farther away. Near the end of the service, people clumped together, and there was no one near her. Lonely and eyes closed, Queen Cheryl felt a hand on her back. Someone got up and walked four pews just so that I didn't have to sit alone. It changed everything. I drove a long distance to that church for a long time because one person made the effort to be beside me. And now I am always looking to see where the guests are, to make sure they aren't alone. Everything that happens at our door is because someone whose name I don't even know, someone made the effort to walk over to me and put their hand on my back. Queen Cheryl's kind church neighbor had treasures of compassion and hospitality. Their treasures taught our queen important lessons, and now we all get to benefit from Queen Cheryl's beautiful, colorful, loving hospitality. Thank you, Queen Cheryl. Regrets can bear incredible treasures. When we mess up and we feel the pain of our mistake and really give this our attention, we can learn so much from what we did wrong. This learning can make us live much better, making our regrets treasures. I've told this story before, but I think it's worth telling again. This is the story of a patient that I call Jane. When I was a student chaplain, and this was the first big mistake I made. In graduate school, you learn a lot about boundaries and not crossing boundaries. Jane came to the hospital with advanced cancer. She hadn't sought medical care in decades and had been living without a home and without people for a long time. It was my first week as a student chaplain, and I watched her kick provider after provider out of her room, one by one, often yelling at them. I was terrified. I didn't want to go in, but I knew I had to. Jane took pity on me. "What do you think you can do for me, chaplain?" she said. I didn't know. "I'd like to learn," I told Jane. And over the next 2 weeks, I learned a lot about Jane. I learned about her love of animals, the ways the world had hurt her, and the fears that continue to paralyze her. The team couldn't treat her cancer and made plans for Jane to go to a hospice home. "It will be so peaceful and so nice," the case manager, who had worked very hard to get her this place, told Jane. Jane did not want to hear it. The woman who was furious to be in the hospital now didn't want to leave. "Please, just let me die here where I know people. I won't take up much space. I'll have a roommate." It was heartbreaking. Healthcare can be heartbreaking. She couldn't stay. Marguerite, a veteran social worker, and I accompanied her stretcher to the elevator. It was time to say goodbye. I leaned in first. Jane looked right at me. "I love you," she said. I froze. Wasn't I not supposed to say that to a patient? Wouldn't I break boundaries? I didn't really know if I was ever supposed to say that. I didn't hear it much growing up. "I care about you," I said. Jane's face dropped. I knew immediately that I had made a big mistake. Luckily, I had a Marguerite, my veteran social worker, who knew so much better. "And we love you. We are going to call and check on you," Marguerite said in a moment. I've never forgotten Jane's face. I've never forgotten the immediate regret, knowing that my response was hollow at a time when Jane needed to be able to express love and hear it back. I think about Jane and I learn from her again and again all these years later. My regret continues to shape my behavior. I know that love exists in so many relationships, and I know that love is the most important thing there is. I love more deeply because of Jane. I love my patients. I love all of you. Love is not only the spirit of this church, but love is the spirit of humanity. My failure to fully love Jane and all that this has taught me is one of my greatest treasures. My beloved friends, how often do you think about your treasures? Let's take stock. What skills do you have? What resources do you have? What qualities do you have? What values do you hold? What lessons have you learned? What are your regrets? What have they taught you, and what can they teach you? Sometimes the world is so dark, or we are so tired that we can't see our treasures. This is where community is so important. We can see each other's treasures. What do you see around you in this beloved spiritual community? Who do you admire? Who has taught you something? Who has helped you? Who has shared with you? Who has loved you? Can you tell them? Let's remind each other of our treasures. The world can trick us into thinking all we ever need to do is be someone else, that we always need more. And while growth and change are important, it is also important to remind ourselves of our goodness and of our worth. Miss Rumphius used her learned lessons and her resources to make the world more beautiful with flowers. How will you make our world more beautiful? How have you already made our world more beautiful? Please remember that you can make the world more beautiful because you already have so much beauty within you. I have no doubt that each of you is a treasure chest. As we prepare to enter 2025, take some time to take stock of your treasures. Cherish each one. Carefully carry them with you into the new year. We need you. We need your treasures. Amen. Our benediction is titled, "For When You Need to Be Reminded of Who You Are." You came to us entirely innocent and vulnerable, and you sometimes need to cry out for help. You are our child. You are made of everlasting potential, and you are always on the horizon of all that you can be. You are a sunrise. The vastness of you is extraordinary and incomprehensible. Your heart, your mind, your body have powerful depths. You are an ocean. You are made of what we desperately need. You have love and ideas to soften, inspire, transform. You are the full moon in the night sky. You are made of everything good. You are holy and sacred and our connection to the divine. You are a rainbow. If ever this world tricks you into thinking you are inconsequential or unwanted, remember that you are made of the most incredible wonders. You are everything. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. I love you. Amen.
I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.